Have you ever grieved over a person's death, even though you've never met them?
Like when celebrities die. It can feel artificial until it's the one who is a big part of your life, whether it be David Bowie or Prince. You've never met them, they will never know you, but you feel a profound loss.
Or if you've ever walked through a cemetery, you might feel an empathy or interest in these people you've never met. They exist only to you as a name written in stone, but you feel a pang of grief anyway.
But it's a shallow grief, not the profound grief of a lost friend, but the fleeting interjection of this person into your periphery, there and then gone. There's no context to flesh them out.
Then there are those whose jobs are to give life to those from the past. I'm Catherine Barner.
And I'm Emery Denman. And today, we're going to share a story with you about this type of grief, digging up the past.
I kind of encountered Logan Wheeler by accident.
This is Marco English, an archivist at Washington State University. Mark was working on a project looking for a photo of the original WSU bookstore. During the search, he came across a 100-year-old leather-bound scrapbook embroidered with the name Logan Wheeler.
Mark did find the original bookstore in the background of one of these photos. But what stood out most to Mark was this amazing kid, Logan Wheeler. Logan was a student at WSU in the 1910s, and the album is filled with photos of himself and his friends around campus and Pullman.
He was very active in the community. He had these very informal frat photos. He went to San Francisco with cadets. There's this odd random photo of some person who's posed with his chicken, and it's a close-up of a guy and his chicken, and it looks very informal.
But having found the photo of the bookstore,
he had to put the scrapbook away and move on to a new project, this time on WSU veterans.
The very next day, while pursuing that new project, he happened across a list of WSU casualties from World War I in James Kwan's book, Heroes and Legends.
And I just get caught upper right-hand corner, Logan Wheeler, and it's literally like two lines, Logan Wheeler killed in France, 1918.
In case it's not clear, America had joined the First World War the year before. As part of the 364th Infantry Regiment of the 91st Division, Logan Wheeler was among the 126,000 casualties whose stories ended in the Argonne Forest during the liberation of France.
This all happened 100 years ago. Logan would be dead now by any turn of fate. But for Mark, Logan went from a college kid who seemed to have unlimited potential to a dead soldier in all of 24 hours.
And it was one of these moments where it just, I don't know, really struck a chord with me. This amazing kid that the day before came alive for me, and the next day, he's dead. He's been dead 100 years almost now, but I don't know. Choke up a little about it still today.
When Logan began the scrapbook, he had no idea he would be fighting in France 4 years later. When Mark found the scrapbook, he had no idea Logan hadn't lived a long life every bit as radiant as the one in the pictures.
And here's the thing. Mark's grief is real. There's sorrow in his voice as he tells us what he knows about Logan. There's all this grief for a piece of what's left of Logan. And to be clear, there's all this grief for a piece of what's left of Logan. It's not the full story, which Catherine and I assumed would be easily found.
We decided to do some research, and it's about to get complicated.
So we recommend you follow along with the family tree at nwpr.org.
The only information we had to start with was his name, town of origin, which is Yakima, and death date.
We split up the search. I was looking through military archives to try and find out what happened to Logan and his division the day of his death, also hoping to find some swanky photo of Logan in uniform.
And I took on the state archives for records of relatives. My search was much easier and faster than Emery's.
Which I still find fascinating. And look, this has been my only experience with military historians, but whether it was Joint Base Lewis McChord, the modern analog of the base Logan shipped out from, or the 91st Division archives, no one was able to find anything on this local hero, which is troubling if this is actually consistent, that military archives are so disparate.
Anyway, I was finding answers about Logan's family history.
Listen, if I could have leaned on Ancestry.com for most of my info, I wouldn't have had a problem either, Catherine.
Either way, I was finding death records for Logan's family. His mother, brother, and sister had all died before he left for college.
Logan married his childhood sweetheart, Toletta, 2 days before he shipped out to Europe.
And I have to confess, there's some slight fantasy in the back of my head that she'd been pregnant when he left or something, and there was kids floating around.
But sometime after Logan's death, Toletta remarried and never had children. And since Logan had no children, the Elizabeth Thomas line died with him. Not long after the death of Logan's mother, Elizabeth, his father, Thomas, remarried and had another child, Gerald Wheeler. Gerald, Logan's half-brother, was the nearest living relative.
Meanwhile, I had found out about some loosely relevant archives down in California, only to find out that they had been flooded, just to my luck.
And to continue with my findings, I found death records for Gerald and his children, but we couldn't find records for any possible grandchildren.
So my leads are washed out, and yours hit dead ends. So this officially means we have run out of leads. So that's the end of the story. Logan Wheeler, a dead guy with a dead family.
Did you guys call the American Legion building in Yakima yet?
This is our boss, Sue Ann Ramella.
You know, the building that's named after him? The Logan Wheeler American Legion building?
Didn't you do that?
No. I thought that you were going to do that.
No, but we should.
God damn it, Catherine.
So we took a trip to Yakima.
We get to the Legion building, this dusty place along some far-flung corner of Yakima, sitting in the shadow of a 20-foot Coca-Cola sign. The interior has something incredibly vintage about it, some mix between a meeting hall and a bar, and the veterans are this cheerful, eclectic bunch.
What we really wanted to know is, you know, does his family know? Does his family
do they care?
What do you guys think about the fact that, I mean, this guy is just an all-American kid, and he exists for the most part because of the fact that we remember him.
I think it's kind of nice that we remember him in the way that that we do, with his name on the sign and named after our post.
This is Matt Stedman, the sergeant-at-arms at the Legion building.
Because, like I said before, you know, he represents that era and those young kids, and his face and his name are... You can't remember everybody, but through him, everybody remembers what the sacrifices that those guys made back in the big war.
They seemed excited that we wanted to know about Logan Wheeler. They had no idea about this 135-page scrapbook that Mark grew so attached to.
All the while, Mark and us had almost none of the information that the veterans had archived. And I don't know about you, Catherine, but at this point, I became fascinated with this disconnect between various elements of Logan's history.
Yeah, I kind of expected it to be easier to track down, that it'd all be in some glass cabinet somewhere, but there are just pieces everywhere.
It feels a little like irresponsible ownership. Not really the fault of any individual, but Logan no longer controls what's left of him, and we are the stewards of that story.
We found a lot of new information during our trip to Yakima. The Legion building pulled out a hodgepodge of letters, obituaries, and newspaper clippings.
It was the first major breakthrough and laid to rest one of our most pressing questions. How did Logan Wheeler die? The one thing I wanted to find the most was exactly the event that led up to Logan's death. On September 26th, 2 days before Logan died, him and another soldier, Wilson, we don't know what his full name is or even what his rank is, went over the hill to fight Germans in the Argonne Forest. Only 17 men from that company survived, including Logan and Wilson, and they attached to another company. The next day, another firefight left only 2 survivors, Logan and Wilson. Then, the next day, the 28th of September, 1918, they met up with other survivors of another company, the third that they had attached to. Together, the men tried to breach a machine gun nest, and it was during this fight that Logan was shot in the temple. It took Logan a full 30 minutes to die, and in that span of time, he handed a notebook to Wilson that detailed every casualty in his company and the companies he had been attached to over the past couple of days. The last words he said to another human being, to Wilson, was, "Please give this to my superiors. I want it kept straight."
Wow.
This is Mark O. English again.
It's funny, I almost didn't want to know any of that. Logan, in my mind, we talked before, the descriptions of him, springs in his heels, always a smile, it's like, that's always my Logan, and it's like, I don't want to see him in my head going over and a bullet in the temple, and it's, yeah, I don't know. It's funny, I talked about how part of what this story did for me, and I hope for the people I told it to and in our exhibit, was make these people who were in World War One come alive. And in a way, this kind of made these people who are in World War One a little dead again. I mean, I don't know. It's a tragedy. I mean, obviously, the world, 60 million people dead or whatever, is a tragedy, obviously. But yeah. I don't even know what to say.
Logan's story was scattered by time, essentially lost to the public. Family is often the last holder of a person's memory, but Logan's family had largely died before him, his brother of meningitis and a sister of an unknown illness. Only a half-brother remained, Gerald, and it was unclear whether he had children. While digging through a pile of obituaries, I found one for Gerald, and it said he was survived by 3 children. We searched for his children's obituaries.
Cutting in here just to let you know, one of the only ways to fill in a family tree forward in time is to look at survivors labeled on an obituary.
We searched for his children's obituary and found one for Gerald's son, Thomas. The obituary was published by the Yakima Herald, which then was able to get me in contact with Thomas's wife, Doris. Doris told me how her husband grew up with his father,
Gerald, Logan's brother.
And they would go out on the family dairy farm, and Gerald would tell his son Thomas all these amazing stories about Logan when they grew up together. Thomas would tell Doris all these great things about Logan and how great he thought he was, even though they never met. And actually, they have Logan's obituary framed in their living room.
It's charming to hear that. Yeah, it's like I know very little of many people know very little of their own families going back to World War One, and it's nice to hear that these people still do remember him after all this time. I mean, obviously he has the building or the American Legion post named after him there, but it's lovely to hear that, again, he's more than a name on a building to these people. So
even 100 years ago, Logan's stepmother appeared to have been deeply involved with arrangement for her stepson's death. As with many soldiers who died during the liberation of France, it was unclear where Logan was buried for years.
The grave was finally identified a decade later after an intensive search led by Logan's stepmother. And once it was found, she traveled halfway across the world to the Meurice Argonne Cemetery in France to put flowers on Logan's grave.
That's touching.
That she went?
That they found Logan. That even though we don't really know what Logan's family dynamic was like, Logan's stepmother, his half-brother, and his half-brother's grandchildren still have memories of a cherished ancestor. That was one of the scariest things going into this hunt for information. That, since it was so hard for us to find Logan's story, it had been lost entirely.
It still makes me uncomfortable that this story faded from public memory. And what use is a name in stone at a university or plastered on a sign in Yakima if we've lost what's important about Logan? How he died, and far more importantly, how vibrantly he lived. Logan's story only saw the light of day because Mark stumbled upon his scrapbook.
After mulling over Logan's story for so long, we feel grief for the loss of a person who died almost 100 years ago. And it all started with an archivist digging through a young man's photo album. I'm humbled to learn that Logan braved machine gun fire, but the pictures he took of friends and chickens were what give weight to that sacrifice.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
This is a production of Northwest Public Radio. I'm Catherine Barner.
And I'm Amber Dinman.
Special thanks to Sue Ann Ramella, our boss, for helping us put this together.
Original soundtrack credited to Jake Cargill.
Special thanks to Marco English, University Archivist, who introduced Logan's story to us.
And the good folks at the Logan Wheeler American Legion Building in Yakima.
Thanks for tuning in.